Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole. I'm going to patch in my boys, Will T and Ray Jeezy. Hold on. You know, we're doing our social distancing thing. All right. What's going on, fellas? We got the whole roster. What's good?
Good, man. How you doing?
It's good. I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. How about you, Ray?
All is well. Happy Father's Day, Will.
Thank you, man. Happy Father's Day to you, too.
How was your Father's Day Sunday? How was it? How was it?
Mine was
Caribbean.
What? I'm my fault. Will, how was your Father's Day? Let me start with Will.
It was chill. It was chill. It was, you know, just hung out with my son. I cooked. Real chill, just like I liked it.
Okay. All right, Ray, how was your Father's Day?
I went out, grabbed some Caribbean food, you know, hung out, got out for the nice weather, for rain. It came down in buckets.
Yeah, I know.
But other than that, great day overall. You have to be a father, so.
You ain't go to like a Chinese buffet?
Oh, yeah, you going to go to a buffet right now, huh? Go ahead.
Oh, shoot. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Into our tradition, the pregame.
Here is what we have on tap. With the intense talk of equality and race discussion, we'll discuss if it's time for the Washington Redskins to change their name. At 8:20, we'll talk about Washington Wizards forward Davis Bertans sitting out the 2019 and 2020 Disney NBA season restart. At 8:30, as part of our PG Baller segment, host of the In and Out Sports Show on WOL 1450, Coach Butch McAdams will join the show to talk about the history of PG balling. Finally, at 8:45, we'll talk about Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott signing his $31.4 million franchise tender. But first, the Redskins name change discussion has come up due to Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matters movement. Should the team change the name? Will T, I'll start with you.
Of course they should. You know, I've been consistent with my point of view that the name should be changed. Look, we're at an inflection point in our country where there's a large voice for change for African Americans. From everything from hiring practices to treatment of the police to, you know, systemic racism, housing, everything. Mm-hmm. It's incumbent upon us as a country and us as African Americans to also say, you know, why we have this, why things are being highlighted for us and being brought to the light for everyone to see. Let's also take the time to call out other, whether it's perceived or real, discriminatory practices that are also that we see, and one of them is the name of the Washington football team.
Right.
I encourage everyone out there just to become educated. Like, for example, I read kind of your short text back and forth, Wally and Will, and one of you mentioned the term Native American. I learned over time that Indians don't really like the term Native American. Mm-hmm. They feel as though, again, that's something that was forced upon them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are all, or we were all one people, you know, but white society is what separated us. So there isn't a such thing as Indian and then Native American. We're all Indian people. So that's one thing. And while me personally, I'm indifferent about this, just being honest, I think myself, I need to grow my level of awareness, but I will share what a friend shared with me. And he said, the day that the last time, I guess, at FedEx Field, when the Washington football team did a presentation about how the name is not discriminatory and how the franchise actually partners with Indians,
Yeah.
Alex Smith had this horrific injury.
True.
And he feels as though that it's related to the fact that the team is refusing to change the name and they were trying to sell something that really shouldn't even be a discussion point. It should have been a no-brainer. It's discriminatory. Bottom line, let's change it. But I don't know if I believe in that necessarily. I believe in karma. I believe in auras at times. You know, sometimes you bad energy, negative energy, you can feel it. But I thought it was an interesting point based on someone else's sort of take on what's been going on. Like, you have this whole presentation, the ceremony to start the game. Wally, were you there, by the way?
Yeah, I was there.
And then Alex Smith ends up with a career-ending leg injury. Do the two correlate? I don't know. It's a discussion point. But I just feel as though if it's about money, and that's the main reason why Dan Snyder doesn't want to make the change. It's going to cost too much. We're going to do this and that. Mm. I think that's definitely the wrong message. You know, I feel like that's the main thing. This is a tradition. This is money. This franchise is worth X amount of dollars. I'm not switching it when, really, like Will already mentioned, we're in a place and time where people are growing in their activism and sharing their thoughts and their views. And we need to be coming together to, you know, invoke change. And if changing the name is something that will help to unify people, to help bring Indian folks back in the fold, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think the discussion should be more of like, all right, for example, there is no football team or no sports team called, let's use this area, the Washington Blacks or the Washington Whites, right? You don't use a culture. You don't use a race, right? Right, for any sports team, typically, right?
Correct.
Right. So if we're gonna really, really have this discussion, you know what I mean? Because like Nana, you can look at multiple surveys, multiple polls that say 9 out of 10 Native Americans feel that term isn't offensive, right? 9 out of 10. So in terms of polls, when you do the rating. But if you really want to have a discussion about showing respect to the Native Americans, like why are sports fans, I mean sports teams, using them as mascots? We don't do that with any other culture. With any other, like, why do we do that? Why not wipe it out altogether? Why are we calling them the Atlanta Braves? The Atlanta Braves, why are we calling them that? Why are we calling them the Braves? Because again, we don't do that with any other culture. We don't do that with Asians. We don't do it with blacks. We don't do it with whites. So we're going to have this discussion to me to show, because I do agree to a point where it is, when you think about it, it is disrespectful to have any of these sports teams represent Native Americans that way. The Cleveland Indians mascot was, you know, pretty much was a character. You look at the Atlanta Braves, the Chop, like that's not, you're not really embracing Native American culture. You're pretty much making fun of it, right? The Kansas City Chiefs. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we're going to really do it and do real reform, then change it all around the board.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. But one thing we can do is, since we are in the most powerful city in the world,
mm-hmm.
we can start with addressing the name of the Washington football team, because this is the most powerful city in the world. This is one of the city that probably gets the most scrutiny and most scrutinized in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? Just because of the president and because of Congress being here. This is the city where all of our policies are created. And for us to keep a name, or for Daniel Snyder to keep a name that some people find offensive to Indians, I think, and his refusal, and his just flat out refusal to have the conversation, to approach the conversation, to me, it rubs me the wrong way. It just really does. And I question how, knowing this, how you and other people can still be a fan of this organization.
Well, I mean, for me, it's because if you look at the majority, because we talk about the majority in terms of research, studies, whatever, the majority, they don't find that term offensive. And I actually, to be honest with you, I had this debate with somebody on Twitter, people comparing it to the N-word. Like, I hate that. Like, I hate that comparison. Because you poll.
I mean, I'm saying, you poll.
Like, this is my thing. You poll in any community, any environment, any community. I don't care if you have the Uncle Ruckus of black folks. Like, you poll it. There is no way that you get 70% or to 30% of people saying that the N-word is acceptable. You know, I hate that comparison. Like, that bothers me. Because
let me interject. May hate that comparison.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly an apple to apples comparison.
Yeah.
But there is some similarity to the comparison, because on one hand, the use of, as you like to say, in the N word, I'm not going to say it, you know, I want to say it.
Yeah.
is offensive. It's offensive.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, if you ask a question to African Americans,
mm-hmm.
is the N-word offensive? I guarantee them. I guarantee you, at least 30 to 40% of them will say no. And okay. Here's why.
Okay.
Because over time, we have taken that word, we've embraced the word, mm-hmm. and we use it as a term of endearment when others, when some of us are greeting each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So we've taken a word that, you know, to people that are, I would say, 50 and over,
yeah,
it's probably egregious and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you that there's some individuals that are 40 and under.
Yeah.
If you ask them, do they find that word offensive? Probably get 30 to 40% of them to say no.
But what this
now,
is...
Now, if you use it in a certain... So here's my second point. Right. If you use it in a certain context...
Yeah.
Then I think it becomes, if you use it in a certain context and if another ethnicity is addressing them in a aggressive or demeaning manner when they use that word, they'll find it offensive.
Which,
right? It's all in how you question. It's all in how how you ask the question.
Yeah, and that's the thing. To the poll that I'm referring to, it's more of the team name and whatnot. So if you're telling me that other than our community, because that's the point that you're saying, an outside community is calling, say, the Washington N-words, right? Compared to the Washington, it's not the same. Like, you can't use that comparison. Because at the end of the day, on a poll, 9 out of 10 people, right?
That was 340 people.
That's two polls. That's two polls. I'm not. There's two separate polls. There's the Washington Post poll and there's the Enable poll. There's two separate polls that both have like the same results. That's what I'm saying. There's two polls, two separate polls. There's a couple more, but two separate polls, not the same polls, that had the similar results. That's all I'm saying. That if you're going to confuse all I'm talking about is the comparison. Like, let's go there. The comparison. It's not a comparison.
I understand that, and I respect that. But if there is a marginal population of Indians that find it offensive, you should address it and do something with the team. That's like I said. You can look. If you know I love hip hop music.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So when I'm in the car, I repeat the lyric.
Mm-hmm.
I use the N word. I don't find it offensive. Now there have been times when I've been on road trips with my mom and maybe an aunt.
Of course.
And they find it offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So am I to say, all right, in my car, I'm gonna say it whenever I want. Or am I to be considerate of those who are around me who find it offensive, have the conversation with them, and then say, you know what, if it is offensive to you, let me stop using it for the time being. That's all I'm asking.
That's a valid point. My thing is that, I do agree with this point when you mentioned Snyder. I think that the reason why this is even escalated to this point is that his cavalier approach to it, right? like how he just said all caps, I'm not changing the name, right? That was the thing, that, and it seemed like he wasn't considerate to that demographic. But he has worked. He has been backed by, say, like the Navajo Nation. You know, this team has been backed by the Navajo Nation. This is my thing. When do we let the minority, in terms of that community, become the majority in terms of the opinions of many? Because that's a dangerous situation.
African American.
Well, no, I'm talking about
N word.
Whoa.
N-word. Whoa.
But which N word are you referring? Like, which N word are you referring to? Like, because that's what we're really talking about.
The one with the A.
With the A. I'm talking about
the one with the A.
But what slang?
Word offensive.
That's true. But what slang? All right. And we don't really typically say that amongst each other. Because I'm talking
amongst
about representing.
I know some. I know some black people who, if a white person or anyone else says it in front of them, they don't worry about it.
And is that the majority?
They don't worry about it. No, it's not the majority.
That's what I'm saying. All right. So my thing is.
But.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Will. Go ahead.
But here's the thing. It's selective, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's some people who have friends of other ethnicities who they allow them to say that word around them.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people like that. And I've come in contact with them. And then a white person says that word around me, they get a death look from me.
Of course.
And then I might say something like, I'm about to slap the you know what out of you. You were with me one time.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember. But he didn't say, he
it
said
didn't
that.
Turn out
no,
well
he said that.
Person.
No, he said that. He said the other way of saying it. Right? Am I correct?
He said A.
He said A? Okay.
And it didn't turn out well. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, it sure didn't. No, it sure didn't. I remember that like yesterday.
It's selective. And what I'm saying is we're at an inflection point within our country. Or at least you have the conversation.
Yeah.
At least you be sensitive to it. But for you to just continue to say, you know, for your last statement on it, no caps, I'm never changing.
Yeah.
I just don't think we're at a point where you're seeing a lot of upheaval, and I think that voice is going to continue to get louder this upcoming season.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know how much. Well, if they have a season, that's one. But in terms, like I would
NFL,
like
they're going to have a season.
Yeah, I know, right? I would prefer, and this is just my preference, is just they just have overall like reform. Like I'm speaking as a guy who's followed this team forever, like overall reform, rather than trying to just dictate on one team overall reform. Like I'm cool with I think you can do that.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I think you can do that without singling out a team.
I think that's perfectly fine.
You know, I think you can do that. I think you could say, you know what, the Washington Redskins change. Hey, we would prefer you to change your name. The Chiefs change your name. The Atlanta Braves to change your name. The Cleveland Indians to change your name. Like I think that you can do that. Like you can tip. You can really do that. That's not something that, oh, we have to start in D.C. You can do that because at the end of the day, if you look at cultures, no culture, you don't have Asian, you don't have blacks, whites, you don't have them being represented that way. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't have why just wipe it out, period. And then in Spanish folks, just wipe it out, period. So now you have overall inclusion, like you have overall respect for each culture. You know what I mean? Because now we're using like the San Diego, we like Chargers, or we're using like some weird or animals to represent a team. You don't need to use any people in terms of or culture, and you can do that. That's not even hard.
I agree with you, my friend.
You know, hey Ray,
change things time. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that Martin Luther King and those who fought for freedom, they fought for years. You know, so it's going to take time. It's going to take more prominent voices. It's going to require the team losing support, because when you hit them in their pockets, that's definitely going to help the cause. You also need to change as a community. Like, why are we still driving on Indian Head Highway? Why has that name changed yet?
Yeah, you know.
So overall change needs to take place. And you see Bubba Wallace in NASCAR, he has a voice now. He's a prominent voice. how long have people been saying, let's remove the Confederate flag from schools, from neighborhoods, from NASCAR races? And they're like, please. I mean, look, people still protesting it now. But he's now making a stand again. He's a prominent voice. Right now, I feel like the Indian community doesn't have that voice that they need, or those voices. Now, can Black Lives Matter contribute to that? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And could it possibly happen? Yeah, I think it will. It's going to take more time. So if you think right now that change is going to happen, or you want it to happen like now or else, then I think that's the wrong stance. I think you just continue to fight until you gain that victory, or until you get the change that you've been looking for. But don't necessarily get angry and give up, or don't think that you're not making progress because maybe Dan Snyder hasn't buzzed yet. Again, it will happen. It just may not happen now. I mean, look at it. Look at what's going on now. You can't even get a stadium in the district because of the name.
True.
So that hurts.
Yeah.
So it's going to take time, but I think it will happen.
I agree. And I'm imploring you, while I'm encouraging you, Wally, as someone who's part of the media and attends those games, to lend your voice to this effort.
I will continue to preach the fight, the message that in terms of like changing as a whole, to be real with you. That's my message, though. That would be more of my message. All right. Wizards for
basically you saying you don't wanna lose your right to go to the stadium cover game.
No, I will voice like my
I'm joking.
Wizards for Dallas Returns will not be returning for the NBA restart. We'll discuss this after the break. Listen to the Urban Sports Team.
Pages.
You dig?
Yes.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, Will T. Let me patch Will T in. I think Ray Jeezy just stepped out for a little bit. He'll be back. Will, you there?
Hello? Yep.
Oh, there you go. I can hear you now. Good. All right. That was on me. Sorry, folks. All right. Wizards forward Davis Bertans will sit out the 2019-2020 NBA Disney season restart. He's a free agent after the end of the season. Thoughts on him sitting out, Will T?
I respect him making a business decision to sit out, but if I'm Tommy Shepherd and I'm Scott Brooks and we are in year one of I'm not going to say a rebuild, but we're trying to establish a culture. We want guys who are going to put it out there every time they step on the court or, while they're under contract for us. Mm-hmm. I have to ask the question legitimately. Do I bring Davis back?
Mm-hmm.
Do I bring Bertans back? And you have to ask that hard question. This is a guy who, is exercising his right to sit out, which, he absolutely has the right to, but he's sitting out because I'm about to hit free agency, not because I'm sick, not because I'm injured, it's because I'm about to hit free agency. So I respect the business decision, but that's not necessarily a guy that I would think I want in my locker room if I'm in the process of establishing a new culture.
Man, they may not even be able to afford dude, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, his market is up. You know, if you look at, what he's done for the team this season, being one of the better three-point shooters in the NBA, and he also had a good All-Star weekend in a three-point contest. He would be a good fit with a healthy John Wall and, you know, Bradley Beal emerging. But, you know, if you look at his market, right, it's probably like maybe $15 million a year. You know, NBA contracts are inflated. So
I heard something crazy, like he could get legitimately between $17 to $20 million.
I'm serious.
I think it's crazy.
Yeah, so like, would you even want to bring him back? No. Now, granted, for this team, you know, he balled out, right? But, you know, and you kind of like look at how he could ball out with a John Wall. But if he's not, but if we're talking about paying $15 to $20 million, then it's like, all right, wow, like we can't keep, they can't keep him. And then on the flip side, you know, they had an opportunity to trade him during the trade deadline, and they didn't take that approach. So now you're like, wow, this team should have traded him during the trade deadline.
Can I chime in real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I'm back, by the way. Hey, the Georgia Live Radio coach is locked and ready, man. He'll be on.
Guard
by the way. But also, Davis Bertans, obviously, like you said, has high value, right?
Mm-hmm.
You made the same business decision as Ernie Grunfeld did when you signed
Otto
Porter at market value. A lot of people criticized you. That didn't work out. This decision is going to differentiate Tommy Shepard from Ernie Grunfeld. That simple. And Ernie Grunfeld would totally sign Davis Bertans for more than he probably was worth. Tommy Shepard should not make the same decision, because at the end of the day, you can score the ball regardless if he's on the floor or not. But you cannot stop nobody at this point, and you need to improve defensively.
So, but this is the thing. Go ahead, Will. I'm sorry.
No, I totally agree with you, Ray. This is the first, I would say, the first hard decision he made was who to draft with that number 9 overall pick. But in terms of free agency and constructing your team, this is going to be one of those pivotal decisions that he makes, because you've already allocated such a large amount of your salary cap to John Wall and Bradley Beal, right? So do you pay Davis Bertans the 15, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 million that he could possibly get on the open market? My answer is absolutely not. He does not make you better from a defensive standpoint, which is where you have is your point of weakness thus far.
Yeah, I agree. It's just like I think my issue with it is like, dang, if you already knew this and you weren't going to give him the bag, then why did you even why didn't you trade him during the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, you were in that process. You could possibly make the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you wanted to really evaluate what the chemistry of this team is, you know, and possibly try to forecast what the long-term prospects of this team are.
True.
I think you have a good enough idea right now of, you know, what you have as far as the organization, but you know, this to me is just the cherry on top of the ice cream. If he decided to not play while you're still in the hunt for the playoffs, he's not sick with COVID-19. He's not injured.
Mm.
He just said, hey, free agency's coming. I'm tapping out. That's not the type of guy you want in your locker room.
That's true.
I applaud the business decision, though.
But you got to take care of yourself, right? At the end of the day, it is what it is. We'll continue our PG Baller series with host of the In and Out Sports Show on WOL 1450, Coach Butch Adams, after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Thing. You dig?
Deuce.
Hello, it's me.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy. Let me patch the fellas in. All right. Right now, we have host of the In and Out Sports Show on WOL 1450, Coach Butch McAdams on the line. What's up, Coach?
Hey, man. I'm happy to be here.
We're glad to have you here. You know, Ray did all the work. Ray, you know, do you want to, you know, talk to the coach for us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Coach, you know, we kind of go back a little bit now. I can say that, right? I was with the Round Ball Report. My man Andrew Dyer, my good friends over there, I'm still keeping in touch with them. We actually did a WNBA show a month or so ago. But anyway, you know, it's always good to have you on. But
I'm coach, man. I fell asleep when you mentioned that. Oh, you scared me. I was like, what happened?
Oh, man.
I
know I like that for a reason.
Hey, coach. That's another discussion, man. But you know what? So, it's a blessing to have you on because you were featured in the documentary. I know it's been a while, and I know you talked about it many times. But for the most part, the reviews were positive, but there was some constructive criticism, like it wasn't enough, and you couldn't squeeze the rich history of this area's basketball prominence into one-hour documentary. What was your thoughts on how it turned out?
Well, I agree with all the above. It was a great piece of work. And it served its purpose. However, from a historic standpoint, you needed at least a couple more hours. And what I wanted to see was to expound a little more on the legends of Prince George's County. Mm. In other words, from a historic standpoint, PG prominence in basketball didn't happen in 2000. You had great players.
Agreed.
For PG County in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and some of the pioneers would be a Roland Fatty Taylor, a Chicken Breast Lee, a Harold Fox, a Jerome McDaniel. I mean, I can go on and on. Archie Talley, okay, a Penny Green. There were just so many great players before 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're seeing now is the evolution of those great players into the NBA. But look, it was not just about a history of Prince George's. They had to sell it. And in order to sell it outside of the DMV, you had to put names that people recognize currently. The Oladipos, okay, the Beasleys, of course, Durant, Quinn Cook. So I understand that. But from a historic standpoint, I wanted that gap filled in with some of those early pioneers that lead us up to the Cooks, the Oladipos, the Beasleys and the Durant.
So, coach, I had a similar issue. I had an issue with like Walt Williams not being featured more because I think you know it was early '90s. Like what Walt Williams did, you know, after Lynn Bias in terms of coming from Crossland, then going to Maryland and becoming one of Maryland's all time great scorers. Like how he wasn't featured enough.
Well, yeah, I mean you can always debate on a player not being featured enough or a player being featured too much.
Mm.
I mean, you can always have a discussion on that, but at least Walt Williams was recognized. Adrian Branch wasn't recognized.
Yeah.
Thurl Bailey was not recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dirk Wittenberg, Dickie Simpkins. I mean, I can go on and on. Those players weren't mentioned. And I'm going to say it again, from a high school standpoint,
mm-hmm.
not talking about NBA, but from a high school standpoint, the greatest basketball player that I saw, hands down, was Harold Fox. Mm-hmm. Was Harold Fox. Now, if you talk about from a collegiate standpoint, obviously it's Lynn Bias.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And then from an NBA standpoint, it's obviously KD.
Yeah.
But from high school, hey, Harold Fox was simply the GOAT.
What high school did you go?
Northwestern.
Northwestern, okay.
Northwestern.
Okay.
He was a three-time first team All-Met.
Mm.
That's difficult to do.
Yeah.
Coach, I wanted to ask, I listen to your show, obviously, and it's very rich in D.C. culture.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that Go-Go needed to have a feature in the documentary as it relates to basketball?
Well, as it relates to basketball, no. But when you do a documentary, and people have different goals and objectives, but if you want to talk about a region and the whole flavor of the region, then, you know, I didn't have a problem with them incorporating some Go-Go to it. I just did not have that problem. Again, my only criticism, and it's not a major one because I understand it is impossible to mention everyone in less than an hour,
mm-hmm.
but the only critique that I have is that they needed to fill in that gap from some of the aforementioned PG County legends starting in the 50s and 60s that led up to the Durants, the Beasleys, the Oladipos, and the Cooks. That's my main critique, is they needed to fill that gap in.
Mm.
And how can you talk about Prince George's and not mention a guy like Thurl Bailey again, mm-hmm. Adrian Branch,
mm-hmm.
Larry Spriggs? These guys played in the NBA as well. Some have championship rings. Dirk Wittenberg. So, yeah, I mean, you can always look back. Gerard Mustaf wasn't mentioned.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he coaches.
So,
doesn't he coach?
Mm-hmm.
He coaches, right?
Yes.
I thought so.
Did Wittenberg go to NC State?
Yes, he did.
He
went to NC State, right. So, yeah, he's definitely a prominent name. I mean, we threw a bunch of names out from our era as well that we felt like weren't mentioned. But let me ask you this.
Sure.
From a national landscape or from a national view, do you think that this elevated PG County and putting them in the discussion of, like, let's say, Chicago, New York City, and L.A.? I know that basketball here, this area is already prominent, known for basketball, but do you think that this documentary helped that cause?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you look at the rich history of the D.C. area, and my role in the interview, and I was so blessed to have been given that role to lay the foundation from the very beginning of the documentary, talking about Ground Zero, mm-hmm. the hub,
yeah.
and that was Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why Washington, D.C. Got a leg up on most cities and areas was because of Dr. E.B. Henderson, who was a native Washingtonian, attended Dunbar Senior High School, was the first known black physical educator in the country, and he studied the game under the inventor, James Naismith. And he brought the game back to the historic 12th Street Y, and that's where the passion and the thirst and the love for the game of basketball began. And then you would have the great players, the Elgin Baylors, the Dave Bings. You know, you talk about the number of players in the NBA in the last 20 years from Prince George's County. Well, you can say the same thing, if not more, in the 60s and 70s, and players from D.C.
Mm.
The D.C. area, and I don't know if New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, I don't know how many regions can boast that they have had four, count them, four number one selections in the NBA. Four. Elgin Baylor, Austin Carr, a forgotten man named Fred Hetzel, and of course, Markel Fultz.
Ooh. That's a nice list.
And then you have two players from the same high school that are in the Hall of Fame. And when the NBA did its 50th anniversary on the 50 greatest, Spingarn put two on there, Bing and Baylor.
Mm.
And so we have a rich history. Just didn't start. It didn't start in 2000. And I am so proud of the young players and the coaches who are continuing this great legacy. And I'm behind them 100%. But I got to let the youngsters know it did not start 20 years ago. Didn't start 20 years ago. We've had great basketball here since the 40s and 50s. The Drew Summer League in L.A., guess what? It's named after Washingtonian, Dr. Charles Drew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've had so many firsts. The first black man to win a Division I men's championship, John Thompson. The first black to officiate a Final Four, James Howell. The first black to be a scholar athlete at University of Georgia, Ronnie Hogue. So we have a proud, proud tradition and history as it pertains to basketball, but I want all of your listeners to know it started with one man, and a lot of people don't know much about him. Google him, research him. It is Dr. Edwin Bancroft Henderson. He's the godfather.
Yeah, see, I appreciate that for our listening demographic, because I do think that the documentary appealed to, let's just say, a younger generation. Like, I've shared this on multiple shows. My father and others, you know, they grew up with AD. I think him and my father went to Bacchus together.
Sure.
And, you know, after, let's say, the first 15 minutes of it, while he is, of course, familiar with the Quinn Cooks and KDs, it's like, I think he was lost for him because it did not go deeper into the history. But again, you are constrained by time. So I think if anything they could do differently, it's just make it a longer documentary, break it down into several parts, kind of like the Black Magic documentary was with ESPN, talking about the rich history of, you know, HBCUs and basketball before,
sure,
you know, the these major D1 programs, so they kind of swooped in with their dollars. So they can learn some things. I'm glad that that the production came out when it did, right after The Last Dance. And I think the timing was good. I think they may have rushed a bit, but I overall, it just was a blessing that little old Prince George's County, where I've, you know, pretty much grown up my whole life. I was born in the district, but we got a chance to be the central focus of the whole country. And I said that time and time again. So,
well, I wore it with a badge of pride. It was a tremendous blessing to be a part of it. And it's a tremendous blessing to be one of many to carry on the legacy and the history of our area basketball. And that's why I'm always available for you and your colleagues and younger people to assist, because it's about passing the baton and having you guys carry it, and then you carry it and pass it on to someone else. But the main goal is to keep our story alive and well, and for us to tell it. Don't let somebody else tell our story. We have to tell our story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Coach, man, we really appreciate it. We're going to carry on the story. That's the plan, right, fellas?
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, Coach,
we definitely appreciate
you for being on. Anytime you want to come on, Ray, please set it up. You know, I've been educated right now. Because you have so much information in terms of the history of basketball in the DMV. Forget just Prince George's County, but in the DMV. And like I've learned so much just by this conversation right now.
Let me leave you with this. And people talk about the Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the four greatest of all time. Well, I tell people the Mount Rushmore of basketball players in the DMV. It's easy. It's Elgin Baylor, Dave Bing, Adrian Dantley, and Kevin Durant.
Mm.
Now, if anybody can can name a player that can knock those four off? I don't know. I want to hear your arguments.
In this area.
Those four right now are the greatest. Now, we can if and but about Len Bias. We don't know how great Len Bias would have been. He could have been the greatest. He, you know, maybe not. We don't know. Okay? You had some players who were great college players, but due to injury, they didn't reach their peak in the NBA. But I'm talking about players who actually achieved. Baylor being Dantley Durant. That's it.
I can argue with that. I thought Michael Beasley was going to be that dude, but things happen.
Well, you know, a lot of them have that potential.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have that potential, but then you have to be disciplined. You have to work at it, and you have to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those players, their games evolved. As the next level, they got better and better and better. Adrian Dantley, epitome of that. Dave Bing, Elgin, and now KD.
So true. Well, Coach, thank you so much. Hope to have you on again soon. We really appreciate you.
Hey, I'm just a phone call away, guys. Anything I can do to assist, and you keep up the good work. I'm proud of you.
Oh.
And, yes, I know the last time I was on, I was so upset with my Nets.
Oh.
Like 11 games under, and they came back and won it all. And so, hey, look, I'm going to take credit. I got them fired up, man. Everybody listens to this great podcast show.
Awesome.
So they were listening, and they said, I'm going to show them guys. I'm going to show that coach. So I got Strasburg and all of them fired up.
You sure did.
And now we are the defending world champs.
You
I just can't wait until we can defend that championship.
Yeah, baseball messed up with that one.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
All right, have a good night, man.
All right, bye-bye.
That's awesome, man. That was awesome. Hey, thank you, Ray. Appreciate that one, man. Hello.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, thank you,
well,
Ray.
Tremendous value to this show by doing that, man.
Hey, well, I just want to encourage you guys and the listeners to check your show out on Sundays, you know, on WOL, because you'll get those history lessons all the time.
And that's real educational. All right, man. Dak got the bag. We'll discuss Dak Prescott signing his franchise tender after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, Will T. You pass the fellas in. All right. Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott signed his franchise tender. It's worth $3.4 million. What were your thoughts on the deal?
Kirk Cousins 2.0.
I thought the same thing. I was thinking the same thing.
He is really posturing. He's really posturing to get the money he won, and he's not losing because he still got paid, even though it's for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the right move for him. Although, as a fan and as an analyst, I'm not sure if he's worth as much as he's asking for. I don't even know if he's worth as much as this franchise deal is giving him and paying him. And I think Kirk Cousins, we've seen how his value is played on Minnesota. I mean, he's good, but is he going to elevate your team to a Super Bowl? That remains in question. Based on what we see on the field, the easy answer is probably no. So with Dak and this franchise that has struggled to even just make the playoffs and win a weak division, bro, I think you got a lot to prove this upcoming season. So you better bring it if you want to get that money, because obviously you're in the right place to get paid.
Yeah.
But if Dallas doesn't think you're worth it,
and I think you got some issues that you need to resolve. So go ahead, work hard. He looks to be a hard worker. I can say that confidently. And go earn your money this year, bro.
Will T.
Ray, you took the words out of my mouth. Dak Prescott seems to be employing the Kirk Cousins playbook, which is I'm going to bet on myself. Even though I was a late round draft pick at quarterback, I'm going to bet on myself. I have shown you that I'm probably in the top 12 to, let's be fair, 18 quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign this 1 year franchise tag, and then I'm going to have you on the books for next year for almost $37 million. But if you're Dallas, you're at a disadvantage because if the NFL season goes through without any fans in the stands, then your salary cap is going to decrease. And I'm pretty sure Dak Prescott isn't going to say, I'm taking the discount. The salary cap, you know, the franchise tag for next year would be $37 million. So whatever contract he signs going, if he signs a contract going into next year, the average will probably start at $37 million.
Ooh, sweet baby Jesus. Dak has had a weird situation because at times you like when you watch him play, you're like, oh man, he can't ball. But then he gets hot and you're like, okay, I see it. He's a top of the half quarterback. So the inconsistency is what gets me with Dak Prescott. And then to get $31 million, like, and then what he's asking for, like he wants to be the highest paid quarterback. Am I correct? That's his goal, right?
Well, he hasn't come out and said that.
Okay. Okay.
In all fairness to him.
But that's the reports. The reports are that he wants to be the highest paid quarterback, right? That's what he's gearing for, right?
Yeah.
Getting paid more than Russell Wilson.
And he should want to be that because we see that anytime a quarterback comes and he signs a contract, one of the quarterbacks that, you know, we consider at least above average.
Yeah.
Which Dak, he put up his stats last year, were above average.
Yeah.
You have to remember.
Yeah, they were.
Out of the 64 games that Dak Prescott has started, he's won 40 of them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That tells you he's an above average quarterback. They tend to reset the market. So Dak Prescott wants his opportunity. We don't know this for sure, but he possibly can want the opportunity to reset the quarterback market and be the highest paid quarterback.
I mean, his stats last year were impressive. But it's about stats. I mean, it's stats. It's not all in context. But, you know, throwing for 4,900 yards, 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 99.7 quarterback rating. I mean, my question is that a little underrated? We're like kind of bashing him a little bit. Is he underrated?
I don't think so. I don't feel like I'm bashing him. I'm just saying if you want to be the highest paid, then you have to perform at that level.
Yeah.
You know, like. And we think, okay, who do you think should be the highest paid player? We're not going to name Dak Prescott. Maybe.
Yeah, I
don't know what number. I mean, you're going to think of like Mahomes or Brady.
Yeah.
I'll even say maybe a Breeze.
Or Deshaun Rogers. Watson.
These guys who have done it year in and year out, they don't talk as much. Their negotiations don't seem to play out as publicly. And I just don't understand. I think it's maybe the Dallas franchise, the whole – there's just the reputation that comes with being a Dallas Cowboy. Maybe that made, like, look at Zeke. That was so dramatized. My goodness. Mm. Like, how many running backs have held on the pad? It's countless. But for them to just make it so, it's like a soap opera, man. So he's guilty by association. Mm. But again, if I ask you, Wally, who do you think should be the top paid quarterback? I guarantee you're going to mention like Mahomes. Or Brady or Rodgers or somebody like that.
Yeah.
You're not going to think about Dak Prescott, and he might not even be top eight in your mind. I'm not saying that's true, but we all know that he's good.
Yeah.
Some of us think he's better than Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz is
eight
more.
Think so, man. I don't think he's better than Carson Wentz.
Well, again, I mean, it's a debate, right?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's not that we're bashing him. It's just that, again, go out there and earn it and get your money because you've shown that you can help turn around a franchise. His rookie year was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And he continues to grow. All he needed was a receiver. Once he got Amari Cooper, he balled out. His numbers are excellent. It's just
is he worth being the highest paid? Am I going to elevate my team? Can I be an MVP in this league? That's tough to argue. I mean, look at Will's view on quarterback. I'm an Atlanta fan. Matt Ryan was an MVP one year. Will's like, that's not enough. He can't win you a
Super Bowl. True. That's
true. You know what I mean? So we talk about Dak Prescott. Can he be league MVP? Maybe. But can he win you a Super Bowl, especially with a franchise who is starving to win? An owner, a fan base. It's crazy. American team.
And to your point, in a weak conference, a weak division, to be honest with you.
Weak division.
Yeah, to your point, yeah. That's a very valid point. It's just crazy.
Well, let me ask you this, right? Dak Prescott threw for almost 5,000 yards last year.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? That's insane. It's insane that he almost did that. I wouldn't have thought that he did that. But you're right.
He threw for almost 5,000 yards, mm-hmm. and I think he threw for 30 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, and he had like a 90, almost 100 rating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not calling him elite. But do you think a guy who can do that 2 years in a row, he would move himself up into one of the top echelon quarterbacks?
Theoretically, yes. But in terms of just looking at the whole picture, or the bigger picture, and seeing how guys like Le'Veon Bell had to grind for years and then they had to hold out to get a deal. I mean, it takes time, man. I don't care who you are. You see, when you go about it, the way Dak is going about it, you end up like a Melvin Gordon. You don't get what you want, and then you end up getting shipped out. You know what I mean? You have to have a consistency over time, and then the money will take care of itself. And that's what Kirk Cousins was saying. Like, I'm just going to keep balling on these franchises, and hey, somebody's going to have to pay me, and he got paid.
Yeah,
it wasn't as big of a deal because of the way he went about it. I think it's just Dak going about it the wrong way. But is he elite? He has elite talent. I don't know if he's an elite quarterback yet in the league.
And it's hard. Go ahead, Will.
No, play it.
Yeah, I was saying it's hard, too. Like, we watch Dak play, right? We all watch. I mean, the Cowboys play a lot on TV, so we get a good opportunity to watch Dak play football. And we've seen this even here with Kirk Cousins when he was here in D.C. Sometimes stats can be manipulated, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of certain games where you get garbage stats. I tend to, like, look at, like let's when we watch Dak Prescott play football as a quarterback, we're like, okay, is he, like Ray said, is he elite? Like, when you watch him, do you see, like, a guy that you are confident in every drive that he's going to give you a touchdown or he's going to play at the highest level? But when you watch, say, Aaron Rodgers or, you know, Drew Brees or Brady, Mahomes, even Deshaun Watson, like, when you look at these dudes play the quarterback position, you're like, yeah. You're like, yeah, they're that dude. They're elite. They're the reason why this team is running. When you watch Dak, you're like, is it Zeke? You know what I mean? Or you know, he gives Amari a slant and Amari takes it to the house. Like, you're worried about other different elements rather than that quarterback.
Well, that's fair. Those are fair analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy wins 40 out of 64 games.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I mean, we ultimately judge quarterbacks on their record, right?
Yeah.
There are probably like five things you judge a quarterback on. Their regular season record, have they won a Super Bowl, the amount of yardage they throw for, their touchdown to interception ratio, and then their and also their QB rating.
Yeah.
And if you stack all of those things up, that compares very favorably to a lot of his peers.
Yeah, I agree. His stats look good, and he wins. You know what I mean? Like, the team wins, too. I mean, winning, depending on, you know, it's all relative, right, in terms of they're playing in the NFC East. So, I mean, he wins games in the NFC East. But, yeah, I mean, he's won enough over his career and put up, you know, good numbers where you got to look at him like, okay, he's a very good quarterback. I just think I always like look at the eye test. I guess that's the thing with Dak. But if you look at stats, if you say you never watched Dak Prescott play football, you would say he was elite by stats. You would say he was elite.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. All right, man, it's about time to wrap the show. What time is it? 9:01?
Yeah, it's 9-on-1. All right. Yep. All right. So make sure you all subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Anyway, we appreciate you all for listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Keep tuning in. Subscribe to our podcast and whatnot on all those platforms. Wilt, you got anything you want to say before I sign off?
Nope. Sure didn't.
Ray Jeezy, nothing. Something.
All right, good night, fam.
Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The ages.
You dig? Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.